I have a buddy named Ray Briers, and he owns a company called ThePipeYardInc.com. And if you have a project that needs carbon steel pipe, he stocks everything you need. New surplus, secondary, you name it, rat hole, mouse hole, conductor casing, pipe pile, sign pole, structural, road bores, dredging. If you're buying or selling, you got an abandoned pipeline, wherever, he'll buy it. ThePipeYardInc.com, 409-788-PIPE, 409-788-PIPE.
It's that time. Lock and load. The Michael Berry Show is on the air.
Decisions have consequences. A friend of mine does a sports radio show, and we were talking about San Francisco and the old 49ers teams and what has become of San Francisco. And I made the point, San Francisco used to be, before we had kids, my wife and I loved San Francisco. One of our favorite Chinese restaurants in the whole world is there. And it's over on, is it Gearing Street? And Girardelli Square. One of our favorite Jewish delis was there. One of our favorite hotels. The architecture. The wharf. The bridge. There's something magical about that city. Just something magical about that city. And now, I haven't talked to anybody who's been there in forever. Nobody thinks about going to San Francisco anymore. You think about homeless people pooping everywhere, needles everywhere, violence. And what's so sad about that is that's the result of decisions that were made. Here's another one. California's governor, Democrat Gavin Newsom, announces that he will sign an executive order that will ban the sale of gas-powered passenger cars in the state by 2035. He is signing this bill now. By 2035, you will not be able to buy a gas-powered automobile, passenger automobile. So the state that has no electricity is going to force you to drive an electric car.
The transportation sector in the state of California represents over 50% of all of the emissions, 41% directly related to vehicles, 11% related to the production of petroleum fuels. And we'll do that by setting forth a goal, firm goal, that by 2035, in the next 15 years, we will eliminate in the state of California the sales of internal combustion engines. We will move forward to green and decarbonize our vehicle fleet here in the state of California. As a consequence, substantially reducing greenhouse gas emissions as well as oxide nitrogen, meaning NOx emissions here in the state of California. In so doing, we'll improve air quality as well as improve the economic climate here in the state of California.
Not true. Not true. People are fleeing California. Businesses are. You know who I feel bad for? I feel bad for Republicans who are outnumbered there. And before you think that there aren't any, trust me, there are. We have a lot of listeners in California. We have a lot of podcast listeners. We see our lists of where they're coming from. We have a lot of listeners on our affiliate out of Los Angeles. We hear from them. And by the way, thank you. We'd love to hear from more of you. Go to michaelberryshow.com, send me an email. Tell me which market you're listening in, what time of day you listen, where you listen. You listen in your car or on your phone, the stream or podcast. We love reading those. I can't respond to everyone anymore. We get too many, but I do love reading them. And while you're there, you can go to michaelberryshow.com, and our merch store is there. And we have more merch that's been added. So more cool stuff with Michael Berry Show logo on it. Enjoy. There was a riot in Louisville yesterday. Two Louisville police officers were shot. Both of them suffered injuries. This is courtesy of WLKY-TV.
shots, multiple shots. You could hear them on that video. Again, one of the officers was alert and stable. The other was at least undergoing surgery earlier. And this is the scene that it looked like as we walked by there. Multiple streets were blocked around the shooting location. This is obviously something LMPD did not want to have happen tonight. In fact, Interim Police Chief Robert Schroeder said that he is concerned right now with police safety.
I am very concerned about the safety of our officers. Obviously, we've had two officers shot tonight, and that is very serious. It's a very dangerous condition. I think that the safety of our officers and the community we serve is of utmost importance.
Pick a side. That's what this election comes down to. Pick the side that the government tells you you can't have the kind of car you want, or the government allows you to make the decisions with your life and your money that you worked so hard for. Pick the side of the cop killers or those who seek to protect society. It is that simple. Roosevelt Independent School District in Lubbock, Texas, announces that they are suspending remote learning at the end of this week. The superintendent very wisely says, kids need to be back in school and they need to be back in classrooms with professionals. And we don't apologize for it. Courtesy, KLBK-TV Lubbock.
At the end of their first six-week grading period, all virtual students at Roosevelt ISD will be asked to come back to campus.
At the end of the day, our teachers are worn out and our kids aren't holding up their end of the bargain.
Roosevelt ISD currently has around 80 virtual students, with 70% of them currently failing at least one class. For one Roosevelt High School student, Logan Bartlett, bringing the virtual students back to campus is a good decision.
I mean, I guess it's good for our class because, I mean, they've been missing a lot of stuff and class has been kind of hectic and just our teachers is just... They're trying to get everything together, and it's been hard.
Since Roosevelt has only had one case of COVID-19 so far, Grimes is more concerned that keeping remote students at home will increase an already wide learning gap.
We've all been blown away with how much the kids are following the protocols. And so, look, there's risk. Every day you get out of bed, there's going to be risk. But we're willing to take that risk because our kids' future is that important to us.
For Bartlett, being physically present with a teacher helps him succeed.
I think... It keeps me motivated just to do better in class.
Grimes says that while some parents are unhappy with the decision, bringing students back to campus is what's best for the teachers and their students' education.
We're going to stand up for our teachers, and we're going to stand up for what we think is the best interest of all students. And we truly, honestly feel we are adamant about our belief that kids need to be back in school, and they need to be back in classrooms with professionals. And we don't apologize for it.
Joe Biden's campaign announced this morning that he would not be making any public statements or appearances yet again today. It's called putting a lid on it. The poor man, he's lost his mind.
I pledge allegiance to the United States of America, one nation, indivisible, under God, for real.
Is your memory starting to slip in your old age?
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by God, you know the thing.
Do people notice when you say things that don't make sense?
Because if you could take care, if you were a quartermaster, you can sure and hell take care of running a department store and the second floor of the ladies' department, or whatever, you know what I mean?
Is the sun starting to set, but you still have some more time on the playing field?
COVID has taken this year, just since the outbreak, has taken more than 100 years. Look, here's the lives, you think about it. More lives this year than any other year for the past 100 years.
Then talk to your doctor about Malarkinol, a memory loss pill with a liberal edge for today's modern elderly Democrat.
Unlike the African-American community, with notable exceptions, the Latino community is an incredibly diverse community with incredibly different attitudes about different things.
Malarkinol is a no-nonsense pill that gets your brain working when you need it most.
I'm just sitting here listening to Michael Berry.
Fighting in the streets with our children at our feet.
back in the news. The nomination of a Supreme Court justice expected this weekend, and that's going to be an issue the left is going to focus on. It's been in the news in the past. David DeLeiden is the founder of the Center for Medical Progress, and you will remember the name David DeLeiden because in 2015 he was responsible for the undercover video series that exposed top Planned Parenthood leadership negotiating the harvesting and sale of aborted fetal human body parts. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's unfathomable. It is so wicked and sick. And if it hadn't been caught on video, I wouldn't have believed it. Well, now there is a lawsuit coming out of that, and David DeLeiden is our guest to tell us about it. David?
Great to be on with you. Thanks for having me.
Tell us about this lawsuit.
Sure. So most recently, some of your listeners may remember that for years, Planned Parenthood has tried to deny the significance of what is captured on the undercover videos of their own top level leadership callously negotiating the harvesting and sale of aborted baby body parts, admitting in their own words that they have quid pro quo deals for baby body parts against the law, that they resort to illegal abortion methods like partial birth abortion, and even sometimes describing clear cases of infanticide where children are delivered alive and killed through organ harvesting for experimental purposes. So Planned Parenthood, for years they were very careful with the accusations that they made about me publicly, though. They would say to CNN or to MSNBC that the videos were, quote, heavily edited. What does heavily edited mean, right? Does that mean there were too many layers of subtitles on it or something that we put on there so you could understand what people were saying? Well, they finally upped the ante about a year ago, and they issued a press statement to media accusing me of having actually fabricated and faked the undercover video. And so we've responded now at the end of the summer here with a federal defamation lawsuit against Planned Parenthood, because the video camera doesn't lie. The footage is 100% authentic. Planned Parenthood has even admitted in court previously, they've stipulated that the words of their own leadership that are captured on the undercover videotapes were in fact spoken by those people, and their officials, when sworn in under oath, will admit the same. And yet Planned Parenthood's Vice President of Communications sent out this press statement to media accusing me of having manufactured and faked the video footage. So we're suing them for defamation now in federal court, in New York City federal court. We're taking it straight to the headquarters of PPFA, of Planned Parenthood National. And Planned Parenthood for years has been terrified of putting the issue of the truth of the undercover videos and the reality of what their own people are saying on those undercover videos. They've been terrified of putting that issue under forensic examination in a court of law, but that's exactly what we're going to force them to do now with this lawsuit that's been filed in New York federal court. So that's a very big deal, and we expect it to be a very significant case going forward. There was also another lawsuit filed earlier this year that some of your listeners may have heard of as well, and it's certainly very relevant right now, that, you know, Planned Parenthood was not happy when these undercover videos were first released, and they launched a multi-year long retaliatory persecution of myself and my colleagues who were also undercover investigators with the Center for Medical Progress. They enlisted the help of their powerful political ally at the time, the Attorney General of California, one Kamala Harris, and they enlisted the help of Kamala Harris in 2015 and 2016 to bring the first ever criminal enforcement of the California video recording law against a citizen journalist, against me, for doing the undercover filming. I am obviously not the first or only person who has ever done undercover video reporting in California. Undercover reporting is something that is legal and widely practiced in the state, and local TV news journalists are filming and publishing undercover video in California on a daily and weekly basis, and yet somehow because of the lobbying of Planned Parenthood and their special relationship with Kamala Harris, I became the first person to ever be criminally charged under the California video recording law for undercover video reporting. So it's a clear case of invidious, discriminatory abuse of law enforcement powers. And we actually have an admission from Kamala Harris's deputy prosecutor that the reason that I and I alone was targeted under the law by their office was precisely because of the content of what I was publishing on the videos, not because they had evidence that anybody's privacy was violated. It wasn't. We filmed in crowded public restaurants where everybody could overhear, like most news journalists do in California. But they admitted in their own court filings that they did this because of the content of the videos, because of the content of my speech. So they explicitly weaponized their law enforcement powers in California in order to try and punish a message that was politically dangerous and politically disagreeable for them. So it's a clear violation of First Amendment civil liberties. So in May, we filed a massive federal civil rights lawsuit against Planned Parenthood, Kamala Harris, the California Attorney General's office, and others in Los Angeles federal court for conspiracy to violate First Amendment civil rights. And that case is moving forward as well. That may be of interest to your listeners as well, as Kamala Harris is certainly seeking more public power, more authority in our country, higher positions of leadership. Her record deserves the most intense scrutiny from the public, and this lawsuit is certainly part of ensuring that.
In that video, the then Senior Director of Medical Services, Dr. Deborah Nucatola, says, and by the way, if you have children listening, turn it off for about 2 minutes because they don't need to hear this. She's talking about suggested prices per specimen of fetal tissue, human tissue. Quote, "We've been very good at getting heart, lung, liver because we know, so I'm not going to crush that part. I'm going to basically crush below. I'm going to crush above, and I'm going to see if I can get it all intact." When you walked out of there, when you looked at that video, And you heard those words, you had to think to yourself, surely once people hear this, we'll make a difference with this, right?
Oh, absolutely. Not just seeing the video. I remember what it was like sitting there in that moment. We were at it was basically a business lunch that we set up with Dr. Nucatola, who was at the time the top abortion doctor at Planned Parenthood National. And we had set up this business lunch.
For years, I've been bragging on the team at Allied Outdoor Solutions in Houston for the beautiful work they do to make your outdoor area, your backyard, look like a resort. Well, their business has just grown and grown organically because they do great work. Your walkways, the area around your pool, your outdoor kitchen, all of that. AlliedOutdoorSolutions.com. And now, over the years, it's taken 20 years, they're now in Austin, Dallas, and San Antonio. AlliedOutdoorSolutions.com. 844-846-1010. Call them at 844-846-1010. My big health focus has been drink more water, get basic exercise, reduce your stress, and perhaps most important, better sleep and more sleep. You don't want to lay in bed where you can't sleep. I use TheTrustedLab.com. TheTrustedLab.com comes directly to your home. I don't want to be involved with addictive drugs and medicine and all that. Completely healthy, completely natural, and I get results. TheTrustedLab.com.
With her to discuss harvesting and trafficking aborted baby body parts, something that she had told us she was already heavily involved in at Planned Parenthood Los Angeles and sort of managing for Planned Parenthood around the country. And I remember when she started talking like that at lunch, she had over, you know, we had over wine, and she was having salad, I was having pasta. And I remember when she started talking like that, and I thought to myself, all right, this is serious. And I asked her a few more questions about it. And
David, hold right there, because I want people to fully understand the import of this. We're talking to David Dalyden, and we will continue this conversation coming up. I'm so tired of being alone.
The only way to social distance.
I'm not leaving my house.
You're quarantining with the Michael Berry Show.
We have to quarantine ourselves.
Talking to David DeLeiden of the Center for Medical Progress and the work that he did, undercover work, getting the Senior Director of Medical Services, Dr. Deborah Nucatella, on video in her own words. Now, David, go back, and I kind of want to belabor this point, or I want you to belabor it. Y'all are sitting and having a very civilized, nice meal while she's talking about crushing human babies and selling off harvested body parts in the United States. This is happening in the United States, and the person that is that high up in Planned Parenthood, she's not a one-off, she's not a rogue operator. Can you put that into context?
Definitely. We were undercover, posing as a basically a middleman wholesaler company that wanted to purchase fetal body parts from Planned Parenthood and then sell them to our experimental research clients or customers, like university scientists, different biotech laboratories, folks like that across the country. We modeled ourselves after real-life biotech startup companies that have cropped up in the past 10 years or so here with that explicit business model, where they basically operate as the middleman between research customers, university scientists, pharma R&D departments on the one hand, who want to use the body parts for experimentation, and then the abortion clinics on the other hand, who are the suppliers. You have these middleman wholesalers in the middle. So we were posing as the middleman wholesaler companies, and we were having this business lunch discussion with the top abortion doctor at Planned Parenthood National at this beautiful high-end restaurant in the middle of Los Angeles in Southern California, and we basically we put to Dr. Nucatella, we said, look, you know, here's our problem, you know, our customers are going to want the most high quality body parts. They're going to be able to need to get a lot of stem cells out of them. They're going to need them to be fresh. The cells are still going to have viability in them so they can continue to grow and be alive. And they need to not be damaged by the abortion process. So how can you help us out? And Dr. Nucatella said, oh, well, it's simple. You know, we've been very good at Planned Parenthood Los Angeles of getting heart and lung and liver, because we know what we're looking for ahead of time. They get the order list from the middleman companies ahead of time so that they know not to crush those body parts when they're going in to the pregnant woman with their instruments, with their forceps, to rip the baby out, to make sure that they don't crush the, you know, even though they're tearing the baby out of the mother because they don't want to have a child be born. But they're taking such exquisite care with where they place the forceps and where they crush and where they don't, so that, you know, they end up ripping the baby out and killing the baby, but they just don't crush the body parts that are on the order list for that day, right? So that's what she's explaining there. And then she even intensified it. So I asked her a few more questions about it, and I said, what else can you do? And she said, so when it comes to something like a brain, getting the head out intact and all in one piece without being crushed, if you want brain, what we can actually do is look on the ultrasound and use ultrasound guidance with this second trimester late term abortion so that we're careful where we put the forceps, and we actually use the forceps to flip the baby into a feet first position, into a breech position, because the legs and the feet are smaller than the head. So you flip the baby on the ultrasound to a feet first position with your forceps, going with the forceps, pull them out by the legs, first the legs, then the torso, then the shoulders, and as that's happening, you slowly dilate the woman more because you're starting with the smaller body parts and then the bigger parts of the body of the fetus, and you slowly, gradually extract that way until at the last step, you're able to pull the entire head out all in one piece. And this is all being done to a fetus, to a child in the womb, who is still alive. So she was describing the intact extraction, the basically ripping a living child out of the mother's womb for organ harvesting, specifically for brain harvesting. And then she said at the end of that description, she said, and we've been pretty successful with that, I'd say, at Planned Parenthood Los Angeles in Southern California. That is a crime, by the way. That's the crime of partial birth abortion. Mm-hmm. Delivering a fetus alive only in order to kill the baby afterwards, that's a partial birth abortion. It's been illegal in our country for almost 15 years at this point. And Planned Parenthood should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law for it. I don't know what is taking the Department of Justice so long at this point. They've had criminal referrals for over 3 or 4 years now from two major congressional investigations that were sparked by these undercover videos.
David, were you surprised she so wantonly spoke in that manner, or had you done so much research that you knew exactly what you were dealing with? Because I have to tell you, it's grotesque. It is. It's painful for me to hear it. I mean, how can you refer to a human life like this? And it is shocking. I'm truly surprised by this, and very little surprises me.
Yeah. I was surprised. It was not the first time that I had heard her talk like this. And yet, I was. You know what probably surprised me the most about it was not the not the grotesqueness of it, not the violence of it necessarily. What surprises me is frankly the arrogance of Planned Parenthood, the arrogance of Planned Parenthood's leadership and of Planned Parenthood National, that they would think that they can just flagrantly, regularly commit partial birth abortions in their biggest facilities in order to sell body parts. And they think that nobody's going to hold them accountable for it, and they think that they're not going to be called out for it. That was probably the most surprising and shocking thing to me, that the top abortion doctor at Planned Parenthood was willing to just so casually admit to such grave violations in the middle of a crowded Los Angeles restaurant. That was what surprised me the most, that they seemed to have so little, so little care for something that could be so incriminating for them.
David, most of us just want to turn away from this and hope it goes away because it's too painful to look at. But you have forced yourself, like Icarus to the fire, to stay on this case doggedly, and you're doing really important, really meaningful, significant, substantive work, and I'm glad you are. Thank you for being our guest, David DeLeiden, the Center for Medical Progress.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Michael Berry Show. Michael Berry Show.
This will upset some of you, and that's okay, because you haven't had an independent thought on this matter since Jimmy Carter was president. This Breonna Taylor case, we haven't received all the information as to what happened. And now we know that while they had a no-knock warrant, they did knock. But here's the problem as I see it. We have created a situation where we are putting police officers into the nanny position of kicking down doors, chasing people down, and creating all this animosity and adversity over drugs. Do you realize that all these cases were about drugs? Fentanyl Floyd? You know, he was arrested once before. It's going to be entered into evidence. And he immediately swallowed the evidence. If we actually devoted policing resources to violent crimes, if you rape a woman, no matter what, we're going to hunt you down. We are going to find you. It would change everything. But instead, we've put cops into this position that is untenable. You want to know, you don't need police reform. You know what you need? Stop the war on drugs. Now, I know, Elijah, my car is drugs. Have an independent thought. Just rethink it for a second. And if you come to the same conclusion, so be it. But just ask an officer. If you have one officer in your family, just ask them what they think about this. There's a group called LEAP that is former officers who have dedicated themselves to ending the war on drugs because it creates such a difficulty in policing, such a counterproductive approach to policing, and it ends up getting a lot of cops killed. That's one of the things, too. You end up getting a bunch of cops killed all over drugs. You know what happens? People walk into the convenience store, and there's somebody sitting outside the convenience store in a state of zombiehood, and they're jerking, and they look filthy, and their faces look terrible, and they're just out of their minds. And people without a brain go, you know what? We should make that illegal. If we make that illegal, he won't do that. Are you kidding me? You think that guy ended up in that state because he thought it was legal? That's the least of his worries. So what do? We put criminal records on people for trace amounts of drugs, and then they can't get a job. Nobody can. We do this with DWI too, by the way. And then they can't get a job. And so people that need to hire drivers, for instance, can't hire drivers because you got a DWI 20 months ago. And I'm not talking about guys that are driving and killing a bunch of people. I'm talking about people who roll through a stop. If we would actually stop and rethink all of this, that Breonna Taylor case didn't need to happen. That is all about drugs. Now, there are some guys that are running criminal enterprises that need to be stopped, but they're doing all sorts of other things. Get them for that. We got to stop this war on drugs because it has failed. It has created so many problems between law enforcement and inner city communities. It has devastated the black community. Absolutely destroyed parts of inner city America. And you know what you'd think? You'd think the Democrats would have said what I'm saying, but they don't. They're just as bad. Clinton cracked down on, and do you realize the more we crack down, the worse the problem gets? It doesn't get better. It doesn't get better. It's not getting better. We've been at this since the Reagan years. Because the reciprocal of the just say no was, we're going to kick down your door and shoot you. We're going to kick down your door and throw you in a cage. Well, that doesn't make any sense. So you got people that are selling it. All right. You think anybody's getting drugs that they don't want to get drugs? Okay, they're selling it to kids. See, that's what they always do. Everything that you need to rally support for, it's always the kids. We can't legalize marijuana, Michael, because everybody will die. Well, actually, they won't. Actually, that's not true. That's not a fact. You've been fed a line of bull, and nobody will tell you, but everybody knows it. Trust me, everybody knows it. Well, Michael, I'm just worried if you legalize it. Well, if you legalize it, what? What, Greg Abbott? People might start making decisions for themselves? Well, I mean, I'm just worried about the kids. Well, wait a minute. Are you worried about kids drinking? Because alcohol's legal. I mean, not in Texas because of Greg Abbott, but alcohol's legal. Do you say to yourself, well, we can't have alcohol? Well, there's enough problems with alcohol. Let's not have anything else. These are stupid positions. Do you realize this? They really are. They're stupid positions. And I will hear from people, Michael, oh, you really, man, I like you. You know, you need to stick to politics. I mean,
I heard you today. You just want everybody to be on dope. Why don't you stop and have an independent thought? Just one time. Just one time. Actually stop and think about it. Let's imagine a world where we don't crack down on this, where we don't crack down on the illegal drugs. What happens then? Then what do we do? Well, guess what? The value of the illegal drug trafficking is that it's illegal. So if you're in the industry, you take extra risks that most people won't. The result of the risk and the diminished supply is the price goes through the roof. As the price goes through the roof, you get rich, which enables you to arm your buddies all around you with illegal guns and defend yourself. And that's what all the gang wars are about. Who gets to sell the drugs? Are we winning? We're putting police officers in harm's way every single day. We're putting police officers in harm's way, and police officers are having to go out into war zones every day. We've been at this for 40 years now. How's the war on drugs coming along? If you were to rate this war on drugs, how are we doing? Are we making any headway? Have we gained any turf? Because what I see is a whole bunch of prisons filled to the gill and not enough law enforcement to investigate murders, rapes, and the like. Allied Outdoor Solutions has been a show sponsor of ours in our Houston flagship market for almost 20 years now. And it's been fun because they've gone from just a handful of folks to growing and growing and growing, doing beautiful backyard solutions to make your backyard, your front yard, your side yard, your front driveway look like a resort. And over the years, they've added Austin, San Antonio, Dallas. And what the work they do, you can see it for yourself at AlliedOutdoorSolutions.com or have them come do it for you. 844-846-1010. 844-846-1010. My big health focus has been drink more water, get basic exercise, reduce your stress, and perhaps most important, better sleep and more sleep. You don't want to lay in bed where you can't sleep. I use TheTrustedLab.com. TheTrustedLab.com. Comes directly to your home. I don't want to be involved with addictive drugs and medicine and all that. Completely healthy, completely natural, and I get results. TheTrustedLab.com.
It's that time. Lock and load. The Michael Berry Show is on the air.
Roger McIntyre is our guest. He's the director of the Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance, DBSA. He is CEO of AltMed, a clinic system that works on alternative mental health treatments, and he's professor of psychiatry and pharmacology at the University of Toronto. And he's been talking about the fact that this pandemic, the economic insecurity, the stress over the election, all of these things are creating, in a terrible way, what he's calling the perfect storm for a long-running mental health crisis. Dr. McIntyre, can you speak to that?
I'd be happy to speak to it. You're correct in enumerating that triple threat, not just of the public health crisis, but the economic crisis and this mental health crisis. And what is, in fact, encapsulating all of this is malignant uncertainty, uncertainty on the health front, uncertainty in the information we receive, economic uncertainty, political uncertainty. I can keep going. Uncertainty has been the theme of the day. And when all of us as individuals in society are faced with this level of stress, it doesn't surprise anybody that we're seeing rates of mental illness, and now, in fact, rates of people reporting suicide that we just have not seen anywhere in our history books.
Well, and let's take those triggers, stressors, one by one. You talk about America living in a fight or flight mode. Before we get one by one to those triggers, talk about the release of cortisol and what this does long term to kind of fatigue the system.
Well, it's a great starting point, and you're highlighting cortisol. And for all the listeners, cortisol is one of many chemistries that we refer to as stress chemistries. In other words, when we're under normal stress or abnormal stress, cortisol, among others, is affected. And what we can expect in this situation is that people, in fact, who are exposed to the uncertainty, as I described the theme, as well as the three areas that we just enumerated, people are exposed to chronic stress. Now, all of us are exposed to stress. In fact, stress is not necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes stress before an exam helps your performance. Stress before certain events in life is what would be expected, and that and helps your performance. What's not good is when the stress is chronic, especially when it's chronic and it's uncertain when it's going to end. What happens is with chemistries like cortisol and other so-called stress chemistries, in situations where individuals are exposed to chronic and uncertain stress, it actually becomes very abnormal how it begins to signal. Some might be saying, well, okay, well, so what? What does that mean? These are chemistries. I'm a person. Well, what that means is that when these chemistries are out of sorts, which is the case with chronic uncertain stress, that leads not only to depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress, but it also leads to heart disease, obesity, diabetes. And most people in this area are concerned that not only is mental illness on the way up thanks to this terrible situation, but a whole host of what we call non-communicable diseases, like cardiovascular disease, obesity, and diabetes, to name a few, are also increased. And this can be all explained by some of these stress chemistries like cortisol.
Well, and you add to that the fact of the constant injection of bad news into people's lives through this hype of this 24-hour news cycle. You know, you talk about the recent poll by NORC at the University of Chicago that says Americans are the unhappiest they've been in 50 years. And you say we shouldn't be surprised at all.
Well, I'm not, because, you know, this comes down to risk and resiliency. In other words, life is full of its bumps and bruises, and how we navigate that is by having resiliency. It is a fact that coming into this pandemic, there was an epidemic of problems, an epidemic of loneliness, an epidemic of unhappiness, and that's compromising our resiliency. That's only further enhancing the risk as a, you know, associated with this current situation we're in. So people, in fact, talk about the pandemic, absolutely, but this pandemic was prefaced by an epidemic of loneliness and unhappiness, which has undermined our resiliency. Along with that, what you're looking at now, from what we're hearing about second waves, we're hearing about uncertainty when the vaccine's available. This is only resulting in a chronic situation. And again, we got three injuries here. One is the pandemic. The second is what prefaced this, the loneliness and the unhappiness, and thirdly is this uncertainty of the future. Those are all very different. They overlap. They form this combustible mix, and this is what we're looking at right now.
You talk about narcissistic injury of economic insecurity. When a person cannot provide for themselves and their family, when they have this lingering fear of any inability to cover their bills, how that is a unique situation, and you use the term narcissistic injury. Can you speak to that?
I'd be happy to. I'm glad you picked up on that, because we've been hearing about job loss in some sectors more than others. We're reassured by some of the return of some of these jobs. It's anyone's guess right now whether we're going to be seeing a V-shape, W-shape, L-shape, U-shape, and now what they call the K-shaped economic recovery. I don't know where we're going to end up. What we do know is there's been a lot of issue with economic insecurity. In fact, the Harvard Chan School of Public Health reported just 2 weeks ago that in America's four largest cities, New York, Houston, Chicago, and L.A., 60% of respondents said they are under tremendous stress to pay their bills. Mm. So having a job is not just simply about having a paycheck. That's relevant for security. But it's also about a sense of identity, a sense of self-efficacy, a sense of structure. And then for many people, it's also the primary source of social connectedness. So a job is not just getting a paycheck. And when you lose your job, it's an injury to your sense of who you are, mm-hmm. in terms of your sense of efficacy as well as your sense of contribution. By the way, as a parenthetical statement, this is one of the hazards of universal basic income when it's provided for people staying at home. You're not giving people the opportunity to have a sense of self-efficacy by having a job.
And I want to talk about that with Dr. Roger McIntyre coming up.
You should wash your hands, you dirty pig.
Come on, keep washing them. Go ahead, scrub, 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 scrub. There you go, that's right. And we're just washing our hands of lies and fake news around here.
Ducky, you're the one.
As we scrub your ears with more of The Michael Berry Show.
Our guest is Dr. Roger McIntyre. He's the director of the Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance. He's the CEO of AltMed, a clinical system that works on alternative mental health treatments, and he's professor of psychiatry and pharmacology at the University of Toronto. Dr. McIntyre, we were talking about, as we went to break, it seemed like you're calling for an opening of the economy because this lockdown is seriously affecting people's mental health. Is that what you're saying?
I'm asking for really a three-pronged strategy, and a three-pronged strategy is a derivative of how the World Health Organization defines health. It's defined as physical health, mental health, and social health. You can't have health unless you have all three. And so in keeping with that definition, we need to, in fact, have a approach to the economy, opening it up. And we're seeing this in many, many parts of Europe, which has been very intelligently directed, by the way, where there's respect for all three of these. In other words, people are wearing masks. People are respecting the hygiene rules and recommendations. The three C's, wear a mask where it's crowded, it's closed, or you're in close contact. This is common sense. That's called physical health. And then with that, you need to have physical health. You need to be alive. And then, in fact, you need to recognize what are the determinants of social health and mental health, and one of which is the economy. So when this whole situation started, we were in emergency measures. We had to shut down the economy. We just recently discovered that those countries that shut down the economy the fastest, they're actually seeing the lowest rates of mental stress. So shutting down the economy was a good thing. It's good for your physical health. It's good for your mental health. But we need to now begin to intelligently, in an evidence-based way, open economies when they're ready. That is balancing. It's like spinning three plates on three different bamboo poles. You have to have your physical health, your mental health, social health. So we can't just open the economy. It has to open the economy in those areas that are able to, in fact, keep the infection rate low, where people will respect the public health recommendations, and begin to provide economic sustenance for people. Now, we're talking about the general population as though it's just one size fits all. This pandemic is affecting some groups more than others. Women, especially poor people, certain racial groups like African-American populations. And we're going to be talking about this for a long, long time. So I think that we need to have recognition of the subgroups that are most at risk and have guidance that respects that these subgroups are especially suffering during this time.
What do you recommend for people who recognize that either they or someone they love seems to be suffering? You know, you talk about increased suicide risk of the 1% rule. For every 1% unemployment goes up, suicide seems to kind of correlate and trail that 1% as well. What are some of the signs that people might see, and what can be done? Obviously, getting a healthcare professional involved is one, but what are some of the things that people can do to sort of self-remedy this and open the drapes and get some sunlight?
Recognize it's a major issue. It starts with being recognizing, or, you know, being contemplative about this. People are not doing well, and if you have loved ones or friends or colleagues who are becoming more withdrawn, more distant, not communicating with you, or worse, are articulating thoughts of self-harm, or have recently gone out and bought a weapon or some type of very lethal means, I mean, I should raise obvious red flags. I think people should be aware of the fact that there are resources. Hospitals are open. They have psychiatric emergency in hospitals. There's community clinics. There's also a variety of support groups that are available online, like the DBSA. Now, if you're in an emergency situation, go to your emergency room. But if you're looking for support, you could go to websites like the DBSA. Website is an excellent website, provides resources, and also groups, peer support groups across the country. And I think that it's something we need to recognize, that this is a major problem during this pandemic. We're asking people, do you have the sniffles? Are you coughing? Do you have a temperature? That's good. Those are good questions to ask. I'd also ask, how you doing? What have you been up to? And, you know, what's your future plans? Now, we're not asking people to be, you know, psychiatry first aid experts. We're just asking them just to be human and ask colleagues touching base. If you have any concerns, help your colleague or your friend or your loved one go to a local emergency room for an assessment. And there are treatments that can help people. There's a whole variety of treatments being developed, and there's a lot of interest in helping people in this, what I'll call psychiatric first aid.
Well, I know it's real. I speak for PTSD Foundation of America, and we lose over 20 veterans a day who come home and there are triggers to their condition. But we're seeing that in the general population as well. And I just don't think it's healthy when people are tied to a news cycle 24 hours a day. They're getting it on their phone and everywhere else. They're not leaving it. And they're being told that every single political issue of every single day is live or die. I think that level of fatigue on the system is very, very unhealthy for the country.
Well, I would say amen to that. And we just finished a study in Asia where the bottom line was portion control. We found that people who spent more time on social media, more time watching 24-hour cable TV, news media, were more likely to report anxiety, stress, insomnia, and depression. And so portion control usually means food and booze. Portion control also means limit your time on these portals, especially with the endless reel of negative, and also what the World Health Organization calls the infodemic. There's a lot of nonsense on there, a lot of misinformation and so on, and it's not doing anyone a service being just totally immersed in that 24 hours a day.
Well, and it's constant outrage. It is complete and constant outrage. I don't know if you've seen this new Netflix documentary called The Social Dilemma, but they talk about how what used to scare us was the television, because it's piping into the home and people are falling asleep to it and not disconnecting from it. But the television does not beckon you the way the phone does, with beeps and this and that and check in and here's this. And so I think it's very hard for some people to disconnect from that. And what we know, and what you know better than anyone, is that this is very unhealthy. The human brain has to rest for a minute.
There's no question. And, you know, it's a conversation which has started long before the pandemic raised its ugly head, and that is the effect on our mental health and well-being by being constantly on our phones. And there's no doubt about it. Let's face it, the phones have been fantastic for humanity and fantastic in so many different ways. But, you know, things come with unintended consequences, and we talked about loneliness earlier. There's a whole literature now in the scientific community showing that people who spend excessive amount of times on social media, on their phone, on various digital connections, are individuals more likely to report depression, anxiety, and loneliness. Some might say, well, what came first, the chicken or the egg here? Because don't people who are feeling that way spend more time on those platforms? The answer is yes. It goes both ways. But the point being is that there's an interesting neuroscience literature that shows that the more time you spend on the phone, more time on these platforms, it begins to change the way your brain is wired. Mm. In other words, your brain's wiring system is very plastic, which means it's changing all the time. It's very it's like when you go to the gym, you work out your muscles, it begins to strengthen. Well, when you're on these digital devices, it's working your mental musculature, and in some cases, ways you don't want it to be, and it's changing the way the brain's functioning. And we're going to be learning a whole lot about this more in the next 5 to 10 years. But there are, in fact, now consequences. That is, some people now report difficulties in sustaining their attention after spending lots of time on their phone. No surprise. The phone is a great device for those who can't pay attention, and it seems to foster that.
I have a buddy named Ray Briers, and he owns a company called The Pipe Yard, Inc., INC.com. And if you have a project that needs carbon steel pipe, he stocks everything you need. New surplus, secondary, you name it. Rat hole, mouse hole, conductor casing, pipe piles, sign poles, structural, road bores, dredging. If you're buying or selling, you got an abandoned pipeline, wherever, he'll buy it. ThePipeYardInc.com, 409-788-PIPE, 409-788-PIPE. Your car breaks down over time, and so do we. Your joints ache. It's hard getting old. We know this. TheTrustedLab.com helps me. I lead a more active lifestyle than I ever have, and I feel better than ever. Delivered to my doorstep, completely legal, lab-tested CBD. TheTrustedLab.com, based right here in Texas. TheTrustedLab.com.
So I think we're really, in fact, in a new world now. This is the so-called digital revolution. And, you know, just like every revolution, the agricultural revolution, the industrial revolution, now the digital revolution, there are consequences to humanity. And the consequences we're going to need to think about is, what's the effect on our brain? What's the effect on our sense of humanity and connectedness? And if you are spending excessive amount of times on these devices, I think you're really walking into some very dangerous territory with respect to some of the negative consequences.
Well, as my tiger mom Indian wife says to my teenage boys, go outside and get some fresh air and put those silly things down and stop staring at them like zombies. Good advice for the nation. Dr. Roger McIntyre, you are a great guest. I hope you'll come back and talk about this important issue with us again.
I'd be delighted. Thanks for covering this topic.
All right.
Southern Pride. Southern Pride. The Michael Berry Show.
Praise the Lord, I saw the light.
I don't have the luxury to worry about freaking Roe versus Wade. I'm too busy trying to keep my family fed. And for the first time in my life, I actually see a way out. Just that little bit of hope is enough for me to have a fire in my belly powerful to freaking charge the damn world, man. If Biden gets in office, man, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm voting for my family. And I'm voting for black people like me trying to do the same damn thing. I'm one of those men.
Praise the Lord, I saw the
light. A theme for this campaign season on our show has been that people can no longer be told how to vote. They might be gay or young or a woman or an immigrant or Hispanic or black or any other number of people who were told before that you're required to be Democrats, and people are seeing the light. And saying, no, I get to vote for who I want to vote for. One of the guys who led the charge all the way back in 2016, which seems like a long time ago, and it was. In many ways, there have been such vast changes in this country because some people were bold enough to stand up and say, don't tell me how to vote. I get my own vote, and I'm going to cast it as I want. Terrence Williams is a popular social media commentator, actor, comedian, successful entrepreneur, and in 2016, he first came to our attention with a Facebook Live video that made him one of the most recognizable voices in this country for Donald Trump. He's been on Hannity, Greg Gutfeld, and more importantly on this show, and he's a featured comedian on The Deplorables Tour, and he's got a book coming out, From the Foster House to the White House, hardcover. It's Terrence Williams, and we're happy to have you, sir. Welcome back.
Hey, man, thanks for having me on.
It's been a whirlwind ride, hasn't it? Last 4 years have been kind of good for Terrence Williams.
Man, you know what? The last 4 years have been kind of good for America.
Well said, my man. Well said. So tell me about this book.
Also, you know, this book is about, it's this book. I wrote the book to motivate and to inspire. I was, you know, raised in a broken home. My mother was addicted to crack cocaine. She had 9 children, by 6 different guys. And of course they were not in the picture at all. And she couldn't take care of us alone and being on and being addicted to crack cocaine. So she ended up, you know, losing us to the system and getting her rights taken away. And I went to the foster care system before I was in kindergarten, and I lived in children's shelters and bouncing from home to home and until I was about 15 years old and I was adopted. But it was pretty rough, you know, going through all of that. You know, I went through so much, but my faith in God got me through all of that. And despite me going through all those troubles and growing up piss poor, I made it all the way to the White House, man. So I literally went from the foster house to the White House. And that goes to show that the American dream is real. You know, to go from not having a table to eat at to sitting at the table with the president of the United States of America, you know, it shows that the American dream is real. And I want to remind everybody that the dream is real. And I hope to inspire and motivate foster kids from all over the world. I mean, anybody that's facing any challenges. And most definitely, I want to inspire people to adopt and to foster.
I agree. You know, we can't be pro-life. We cannot say, woman, that is a child inside of you. We understand you may not be able to raise that child. So let's, as a society, find ways. If we don't do that, I mean, it strikes me that we should be pro-life after babies are born and not just before they're born.
Exactly. And people also need to give older children a chance, too, when they do decide to foster and adopt, because a lot of people, they only want to adopt a baby, like an infant or a toddler.
Yep.
But what about that 12-year-old? What about that 13-year-old? That is still a child, and they need somebody to believe in them and somebody to help them believe in themselves. And they need love just like that 2-year-old. That 12-year-old needs love too. You know, it's so many older ones that are not being paid attention to. And I think, you know, as Americans, we should all step up and help our children that don't have homes.
You know, Terrence, when the Challenger crashed in January 28, 1986, President Reagan that night spoke. It was supposed to be the State of the Union address. But he spoke to the nation that night, and he said that the astronauts had slipped the surly bonds of Earth to touch the face of God. I'll never forget that line. And I will tell you, when I talk to people who have fostered children, I see people who represent to me the face of God. There is nothing but goodness in them. And by the way, Amy Coney Barrett, an individual with a background in that, and Michelle Bachman in Minnesota. But I have come to know people. We've had them on the show. I've met people who have fostered children over the course of time. And one thing you find is they never foster one child. It so changes their life that they say, you know what? I don't know if we can afford it. I don't know if we have enough time. But I know that I'm going to do everything possible to change this world. And that's how you do it.
Mm. Yep, exactly. You know, those are the real American heroes. And, you know, in the family who adopted me, they already had children, and they didn't have much money at all. Like, they could, you know, they had enough money to put clothes on my back and to feed me, but they didn't have, like, they were not rich at all. You know, one of the parents were not, like, they were not even working at the time. One of them was just going to school still, and I mean, so it was like, you know, it was still a struggle, but you know what? They had it in their heart to still adopt because they knew that they could take care of a child. They might not have riches and, you know, but you don't need riches to take care of a child. You know, if you can feed that, if you can afford to feed that child, if you can afford for that child to be under your roof, then why not? And they did that. You know, they sacrificed a few dollars and said, you know what? we can afford to take care of this boy. And I really appreciate that because they didn't have to, you know. But the fact that they did, it was just such a blessing. And I've met all kinds of foster parents out there. I mean, and they spend their whole life having kids all in their home, and they want to adopt them all, but it's just impossible, you know. I mean, it's just impossible to adopt them all. But it's sad that people have to take in like 4 or 3 kids, 5 kids, because nobody else wants the kids. You know, it's like if we all step up as Christians in this country or whatever, and just as Americans and step up and let's take care of these kids, you know.
We'll continue our conversation with Terrence Williams. His book will be out October 15th, From the Foster House to the White House, coming up.
This is the Michael Berry Show.
We are talking to Terrence Williams, man of many hats. He was thrust onto the national stage based on a Facebook Live video he did in 2016. He dared to be different, a black man who said, "I'm for Donald Trump," and could tell you why. And the harder they hit him and the more they insulted him, the more he laughed and made others laugh. Laughter really is the best medicine, and liberals are humorless. They can't laugh at themselves or anything else. Terrence Williams makes people laugh. He's been a featured comedian on the Deplorables tour. He's our guest, and his book, From the Foster House to the White House, will be out October 15th, and I would encourage you to buy it. Terrence, I got to tell you, I've been very inspired. It's been a cause of mine since I ran for office 20 years ago and had a larger percentage of the black vote than anybody had ever seen a Republican get in a city of Houston election. I was elected citywide in the seat that Sheila Jackson Lee used to hold. And I've always said, stop pandering to people based on what you think they want based on their race, and go after their hearts and their heads with good policies, and you'll be surprised. You will get more votes among different groups that you don't think you can get votes from than you would imagine. And I got to tell you, I have been very inspired. When I saw the RNC and the list of folks, you know, we've spoken to Wesley Hunt, a dear friend of mine who's running for Congress here in the 7th Congressional District, who happens to be a Republican. And who happens to be black. He's an Apache pilot, war pilot, 55 combat missions, went to West Point, as did his sister. His father's a 23-year veteran. I see some great things for America because I see more and more black folks saying, I don't care what anybody says, I get to choose my vote. And if they vote Democrat, so be it. But I see more and more black folks saying, I'm not going to let anybody else tell me how I have to vote because of my skin color. Do you see that?
You know what? I agree, man. Like, you know, all this pandering must stop. It must stop, you know, telling people what you think they want to hear. No, you need to focus on what people need and not what you think they want to hear. You know, it's all about policy and actually do something. Because most of these people who pander, they don't really do anything at all. You know, they are just all talk, no action. The people who pander are all talk, no action at all. And that's why I like President Donald J. Trump, because he does not pander to the minority community. He does not pander one bit at all. But what he do is he do backflips and cartwheels for the black community. He goes out of his way. I mean, this man has done so much. He is a champion for the minority community. Before that Chinese virus ruined our economy, I mean, it demolished our economy. Before that, black unemployment was at historic low, all-time low, numbers people never seen before. It was just so, it was like low, low, low. We had a first black president who didn't even get us down to those numbers, I mean, in the black community. But President Trump has done more for black people than our first black president, which is crazy. Look what he did for their HBCUs. The HBCU colleges, they begged Obama. They said, "Obama, we're tired of coming up here asking for funding. Can you just give it us? Can you just make it to where we don't have to come up here and ask?" And Obama would not do it. But guess what? President Trump did that. HBCU is receiving more funding than they ever received before, and they don't have to come back and knock on the White House door anymore. They will just continue to get it. President Trump did that. You look at black poverty was at an all-time low before COVID-19 ruined our country. I mean, the Chinese virus, so Chinese-19 before it hit our country. Look at the First Step Act that freed over thousands and thousands of black people from prison. It's like a reversal of Bill Clinton's 1994 bill, and that bill was endorsed by Joe Biden. You know, he sponsored that bill. And so President Trump is doing so much. I mean, I can go on and on. I should have wrote this stuff down because it's too much to remember. The man has done so much just in his little in his first 30 days. He did a lot. I was like, I can't keep up with this. You know, I can't keep up with this. He even done so much.
Terrence, let me ask you a question. You have been very bold and very public in your support of the president. I have a number of guests and friends who will tell me that other blacks will say to them that they're angry at them for so publicly supporting Trump. But talk about some of the people who've been inspired by your support and your willingness to speak out. Because I think more folks are supporting Trump than are willing to admit it on that side of town.
Oh, man, let me tell you, the silent majority is real. You know, people are not speaking out because the climate, this political climate is so toxic. You know, people are scared to speak out because they will be vilified and crucified on national TV and in public. These people, when you speak out and you show your support for President Trump, the left, they are such a bunch of thugs and bullies. I mean, these people they have a mafia mentality. They will come for you just for thinking outside of the box. You know, like they will put your head on a stake for thinking outside of a box. So people don't want to have their livelihoods ruined because some loony liberal can't accept the fact that someone is voting for Trump. So people are just going to go and vote for him silently. And I think President Trump is going to be surprised by the amount of support he's going to get in November. I don't even think he even realized, like, the numbers they think they're going to get are going to be way higher. They're going to be like, wow, hold on, we didn't expect that. Oh, Lord, hold on. We did not expect those kind of numbers.
Oh, Terrence, I think you're dead wrong. I think when they see those numbers, they're going to claim he cheated.
They're going to claim he cheated, you know. And that's what I said, you know, the National Guard must deploy throughout these cities, throughout the states, on Election Day. Because when he wins, I think people are going to riot and loot, and they are going to do it 10 times harder than they did it with George Floyd. It's going to be absolutely bonkers. It's going to be crazy.
I think you're absolutely right. Terrence Williams, you are a great guest. We'd love to have you back, my friend. The book drops October 15th, From the Foster House to the White House. I love it. Thank you, my man.
Thank you.
A group of dads, we end the story with this upbeat news. A group of dads tackle and detain a registered sex offender accused of peeping at a teen girl in the bathroom. This story comes to us from WSPA in Spartanburg, South Carolina.
According to the solicitor's office, this man, Douglas Lane, was looking at a 15-year-old who was using the restroom inside the Cracker Barrel. The victim saw his head under the stall, then ran out of the restroom and told her dad what happened. The victim's dad said he asked a female employee to check the bathroom. When the employee found Lane in one of the stalls, she told him to get out. That's when there was a confrontation between Lane and the victim's dad. Police say Lane tried to get away, but a group of parents helped detain him in the parking lot until police arrived. Lane's phone was found on the bathroom floor, and he's been charged with voyeurism, but this isn't his first time. Lane is a registered sex offender and has been charged at least 8 separate times for peeping before this incident.
I really don't want to know what I would do. I'd be afraid of what I would do. And I do not judge any of the parents for what they did. My opinion got what he deserved for sure.
He is a danger to the community, and especially to minors, Your Honor.
Lane received a cash surety bond of $2,000 and will be put on GPS for monitoring.
I have a buddy named Ray Bryars, and he owns a company called The Pipe Yard, Inc., INC.com. And if you have a project that needs carbon steel pipe, he stocks everything you need. New surplus, secondary, you name it. Rat hole, mouse hole, conductor casing, pipe pile, sign pole, structural, road bores, dredging. If you're buying or selling, you got an abandoned pipeline, wherever, he'll buy it. ThePipeYardInc.com, 409-788-PIPE, 409-788-PIPE.